AT&T is about to get much bigger.
Does that mean my service will get better or my phone bill any bigger?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Adrienne Hill in for Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, March 21st. Coming up, the radiation mess in Japan spreads to some food over there. It's been a year since the health care law was passed, and some states want to reform the reform. And later, how are you feeling today? Chances are the people who follow you on Twitter feel the same way. Ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
What does Tier 1 capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
AT&T says it's buying T-Mobile USA in a near $40 billion deal. Now, T-Mobile is the nation's fourth biggest wireless carrier, and combined, the two would become the nation's biggest. Let's talk to Carl Howe, a telecom analyst with the Yankee Group, on how this is all going to play out. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Explain how these two companies would become one.
The merger is actually one where AT&T will pay about $25 billion in cash, and then the rest is in stock. The two companies would then go on to operate as one, and that would create the largest telecom carrier or the largest wireless carrier in the United States.
So more importantly, though, Carl, I want to know if this is going to mean my AT&T phone bill will change. Will it be cheaper for me? Are prices going up? What's this going to mean?
Well, I think there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that you'll have more coverage simply because AT&T gets a whole bunch of new spectrum, and they got a lot of wireless towers. The bad news is that AT&T now becomes the de facto national carrier for GSM handsets. So that's the iPhone and a variety of other handsets. So in all likelihood, you'll see prices go up.
What about the networks? You said cell phone towers will be more abundant. Will I get service in downtown L.A. or Manhattan or Chicago?
You should get much better service, actually, because T-Mobile has been covering those same cities for quite a while. If AT&T pulls all of their cell towers into their network, you're going to get better coverage.
All right. Carl Howe, telecom analyst at the Yankee Group. Carl, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's get a little more analysis this morning from Marketplace's David Gura on how the deal shows just how different the mobile phone market is today.
Germany's Deutsche Telekom bought into the U.S. market a decade ago when the wireless industry was growing rapidly. But 10 years later, it's dominated by two major players, and the Germans decided to cash in their chips. If the deal is approved, Deutsche Telekom would get an 8% ownership stake in AT&T and a seat on the company's board. The Justice Department and the Federal Communications Commission both have to approve the deal. The new AT&T would have around 130 million customers, and there's concern that a market with three wireless providers could get even smaller if, say, Verizon Wireless decided to buy Sprint Nextel. Analyst Christopher King with Stifel Nicolaus says that makes people wonder about what might happen to their cell phone bills.
There are going to be significant questions raised over the course of the next couple of days about this deal and whether it can go through or not.
If it does, costs could go down. Service, especially in rural areas, could get better with a more modern network. And current T-Mobile customers would have more options, including the iPhone. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Assuming the deal does pass regulations muster, what are the broader implications for the economy?
For that, we turn to Julia Coronado, chief economist at the investment bank BNP Paribas. She joins us. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So what do big mergers like this tell us about the health of the economy?
Well, usually when mergers and acquisitions pick up, that's a good sign that businesses are feeling confident enough about the future that they're willing to become aggressive, look for deals, look for ways to grow and expand their operations. And it's also an indication that markets are willing to finance these transactions. So it's optimism from the markets and from the businesses themselves.
But when I hear about streamlining, as we have in this case, I think layoffs. Do big mergers always lead to layoffs? And doesn't that hurt the economy?
In general, yes. Mergers are often associated with layoffs. There is some overlap in operations that can be trimmed as the result of a merger. In fact, that's one of the ways the merger creates value. So in and of itself, the merger is not job-friendly. To the extent, however, that it serves as a signal for the broader economy that activity is picking up and that businesses are becoming more confident, it can be, not always, but it can be associated with a pickup in job growth.
Great. So do you expect we'll see more consolidation in the telecommunications industry sort of going forward?
Well, I would say bottom line, probably so. This is an industry that is intensely competitive, even though consumer spending in this area is very strong. Consumers are very picky, very cost conscious. And so, again, it's an intensely competitive industry, which usually does lead to some merger and acquisition activity.
Thanks, Julia.
Oil prices shot up to $103 a barrel because of the situation in Libya. Boeing completed the first test flight of its new and newly massive 747 jumbo jet yesterday. That plane is going to seat more than 450. And Facebook says it's buying phone app developer Snap2 for $70 million. Looking for more numbers, stocks, big mergers, economic data? It's all at our website, marketplace.org.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, March 21st. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You can follow me on Twitter at Radio Chio.
And I'm Adrian Hill on Twitter as well at Adrian Hill. That's with one N. Now, the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? The U.S. State Department said it's offering the staff in Japan potassium iodide pills out of what it says is an abundance of caution. That comes after workers at that nuclear plant fled again from smoke at the tsunami-damaged plant.
The World Health Organization today also said there's a serious risk of food radiation in Japan. As we continue to cover the human and the economic tragedy there, Marketplace's Rob Schmitz is with us from Tokyo. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Steve.
How are the Japanese dealing with the possibility of this contamination?
Well, ever since Saturday, when we learned that spinach and cow's milk from the region surrounding the power plant were contaminated, I think people here have operated under the assumption that radiation has already hit other parts of the food chain. It's important to note that the levels of radiation found in these food samples weren't dangerously high, but that wasn't reassuring to some shoppers I interviewed this weekend in Tokyo. Shigeo Kimura was one of them. She thought that fish could be contaminated too. So here she's saying that she's through with eating fish, and when she shops for vegetables, she says that she's been checking to see which region they come from to make sure they're not being grown anywhere near the Fukushima plant.
What about globally, Rob? Will shoppers in, Arizona or Alabama feel any of this at the supermarket?
I think that's up to individual shoppers. Japan has ordered producers in the prefectures near the nuclear plant not to ship any of their food, but that's probably not going to make people feel any safer toward Japanese products. I spoke with a branding consultant in Tokyo today, and he told me the Japanese brand, whether it's Kobe beef or sushi, will most likely be tarnished for some time over this disaster.
Marketplace's Rob Schmitz, our Asia Bureau Chief, joining us from Tokyo. Rob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Before the earthquake and tsunami, the plant produced electricity. Now that it's badly damaged, the country will have to use more fossil fuels for power. That means global climate change consequences. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports from our sustainability desk.
When Japan signed the United Nations Kyoto Protocol, it promised to steadily reduce its carbon emissions. Nuclear energy has been a big part of that, since it's a low-carbon power source. Henry Derwent heads the International Emissions Trading Association.
Their plans to meet their Kyoto target will have to be changed because they're going to be emitting more.
Emitting more carbon as they make up for lost nuclear power with coal, gas, and oil. Though given the disaster, Japan could renegotiate its Kyoto goals. Europe is set to emit more as well. Germany has taken nuclear plants offline. Switzerland has suspended future projects. More fossil fuels there, too. But any country that's agreed to reduce emissions and will now pollute more has to pay through buying carbon credits, says Point Carbon analyst Lisa Zeljit.
So if one cheap abatement opportunity, namely nuclear, falls by the wayside, then something else will have to make up for it, and carbon prices will be higher in the meantime.
But Zeljit says no one's yet talking about the long-term choice between radiation and carbon pollution. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Well, it has been more than a week since the deadly quake and tsunami in Japan, and efforts to deal with the disaster continue. And the economic effects are starting to be felt in various sectors and industries all across Asia. Some countries could see a surge in demand from Japan, while others are bracing themselves for shortages in supply. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
Japan is famous for its electronics, and so increasingly is South Korea. And with a shutdown in Japanese manufacturing, Korean companies are already feeling the benefit as customers look for alternative supplies. But longer-term supply problems could be a major headache for countries like Taiwan and China. They rely on imports of Japanese components to assemble final products. Stephen Joski is from the Economist Intelligence Unit in Beijing and says manufacturing there has already been affected.
There's already been a clear impact in terms of, I think, the high-end electronics and a lot of the components for Japanese manufactured goods in China. We've already noticed, you know, the price of Japanese consumer goods, some items in low stock, has risen quite rapidly already.
The one country which stands to benefit the most is Australia. Japan's suffering from major power shortages, so for energy, it will most likely turn to Australia's supply of coal and gas. And as Japan begins to rebuild, it will need lots of steel and will rely heavily on Australia for its iron ore and coking coal. I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
This week marks 1 year since President Obama signed the health care reform law. The law requires everyone to have insurance and sets up exchanges where individuals can compare policies. But there's a big group of immigrants living in this country who won't be part of the plan. And as Jennifer Collins reports, that has some states thinking about reforming reform.
There are about 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country, and this is how most of them get their health care.
Maria Morales.
At a crowded free clinic or a local emergency room. Most illegal immigrants don't have health insurance. Those who do typically buy it on the individual market, where premiums can be sky high. Under reform, the new exchanges will make individual policies more affordable, but the federal law prohibits illegal immigrants from using the exchanges. Sonal Ambegaokar is a health policy attorney with the National Immigration Law Center.
So we will still have the issue of certain uninsured people going to the emergency room as their primary source of care and having that cost shifted to all of us.
In California, that cost is already more than $1 billion a year. Mike O'Day is a health policy associate at Children Now. He says California set up its insurance exchange to require insurers that want to participate to also create alternatives for illegal immigrants and others who can't use the exchange.
It calls for these outside options by requiring insurance companies to offer similar plans outside of the exchange at the same price.
O'Day says other states are looking at adopting California's model.
Some people call it the residual markets, the shadow exchange.
He says bringing in immigrants who tend to be young and healthy would help insurers offset the cost of the sicker people that they would be required to take on. Arturo Vargas Bustamante researches immigrant healthcare at UCLA.
It's definitely controversial because it's like an indirect way of providing coverage to this population.
But Vargas Bustamante says the real question is whether undocumented immigrants will be able to afford the policies, whether they're in the shadows or not. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The Chicago Tribune reports there's a trade show face-off going on this month. Two beauty industry trade shows are vying for Midwest Beauty Convention supremacy. America's Beauty Show has been around for 87 years and attracts nearly 40,000 hairstylists. It's being challenged by the Fresher-Faced International Salon and Spa Expo. Perhaps a reality show is in order. You could call it Beauty Gets Ugly.
Ew.
And maybe it has some sort of competition involving fake eyelashes, sky-high updos and very elaborate manicures.
Oh, those are some long nails.
I'd watch.
Yeah,
I'd watch
too, absolutely.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, March 21st. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrian Hill.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. We got word this morning that sales of pre-owned homes fell by more than 9.5% last month, and median home prices are at their lowest level in nearly a decade. If that sounds like bad news, well, take heart. On this first full day of spring, Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan says there could be a budding bright spot for wannabe homeowners. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So why all of a sudden the upbeat mood on home buying?
Well, there are two reasons. One reason is that the statistics seem to be better. I mean, not for every house in every neighborhood, but for a lot of places, the statistics are better than they were. And second, spring is the beginning of the full home sale season, so I actually pay attention then.
I thought the housing market was still in the tank and home prices were going the wrong way, too.
Well, parts of it are in the tank, and parts of it are going the wrong way. But a lot of parts, I think, are reasonably okay. And I suspect when the numbers come out later today and later in the week, that you're going to see a certain amount of stability. Now, I'm not telling you to run out and buy a new home today because prices are going to the moon. But it may be time to actually do it if you're looking for a house to buy as a place to live as opposed to as an investment, which is a whole other story.
But don't higher mortgage rates, Alan, higher mortgage rates in the future hurt home prices? Why would you think of buying right now?
Well, because if you bought now, and again, you're paying the right price in a good neighborhood and you're putting up a down payment, if you can get a fixed rate 30-year mortgage, which you generally can if you live through the application procedure, you have something where your costs are largely fixed, and as long as you don't lose your job, you're going to probably do okay if you hang on for at least 5 years, regardless of whether mortgage rates go up or down in the future. You're in a place you can afford, and sooner or later, you make out if you do that.
Alan, you sound positively optimistic, not at all like yourself. What's happened?
Well, even us old curmudgeons occasionally change our opinions when it's spring and we become cheerful.
All right, Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan with us. Alan, thanks.
Thank you, Steve Chiotakis.
It's a battle of internet browsers. The people who developed Firefox are launching a new version of their software tomorrow, determined to seize control of turf that King Microsoft's already surrendered. Here's Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
When Microsoft launched its spiffy new version of Internet Explorer last week, the company issued a statement saying IE9 is intended to be run on a, quote, modern operating system. Essentially, the message to Windows XP holdouts is, get with the program and upgrade to Windows 7 already.
It's probably good for Microsoft to say that, considering they're in the business of selling operating systems.
Mike Beltzer is product director for Mozilla Firefox. He says Microsoft's decade-old Windows XP still powers the biggest share of web traffic, so the new and faster version of Firefox being launched this week works with XP.
There's so much great new web technology out there, improvements in speed, security, and capability, that we just couldn't imagine leaving 50% of our users behind.
Beltzer worries web designers will be slow to adopt new features if only a small share of their users can benefit, so he says Firefox will support XP as long as it stays popular. Microsoft argues that Internet Explorer 8 is good enough for XP holdouts. The actual quote is that its older browser is still safe, fast, and reliable. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
And finally, Adrian, new research out of Indiana University says moods determine who hangs out with whom on social network sites such as Twitter.
Yeah?
Yeah. So happier people tend to congregate with one another, right? You see their tweets
they're
and you
super
reply
upbeat, like,
and
they're
and then you can retweet those happy thoughts. Yay! Woohoo! Exactly. Yeah. And then people who are unhappy, typically find one another as well. So you know the old adage, right, about misery?
Misery loves.
Followers, not company, followers, is in this case for Twitter. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Adrian Hill.
This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.